we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dityampi Tatiampi Sabaha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Dharma Saranam Gacchami, Dityampi Tatiampi Sabaha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Sangham Saranam Gacchami, Dityampi Tatiampi Sabaha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, Gami Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo Prajna Paramita Hridaya. Homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. the precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhamma, in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. O happy blessed day, O happy blessed place, O happy blessed time, O happy blessed path, O happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutiyampi tatiyampi sabaha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
I've been looking at change, and in yesterday's workshop, impermanence was brought up a lot, about we were looking at where we get a sense of home is, and it was brought up a few times that it's kind of cliche, but it's fun. Home is where the heart is, so I get to bring home with me wherever I am, and it was neat to see a larger perspective that there's that physical structure of a home. It might be a house or an apartment or a hermitage, but there's also the outdoor space as a place of home. And the last while, I've been in a lot of transitions of homes, as it were, and I can see where conditional use is a lot. That is suffering because it has this static, inflexible way of things are not impermanent, they're permanent and they should stay the way they are.
Right. Yeah.
They should never change. And when they change, that is, it feels uncomfortable to conditioning.
Yeah, so it feels uncomfortable to conditioning when things change, because in conditioning's sense, things should stay static.
Yeah.
It should stay the same. And you've been looking at impermanence, or at least since we had been doing the workshop yesterday.
Yeah.
And looking at how you've been moving around from place to place.
Yes.
And home is where the heart is, and doesn't necessarily mean that it's tied to a particular place.
Right, right. And I was looking at how I bring practice into those spaces, wherever I am, and how practice looks. And conditioning says it should look differently when I'm at the monastery than when I'm at the other. Outside. I don't know what to say. I don't know what to call it anymore.
Yeah, in another place.
The outside world, whatever it is. And it should look differently here than it does there. And uses that definitely against me when I'm not in monastic training.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so when you're not in monastic training, the practice should look different.
Yeah.
Or at least the things that represent practice should look different here than they do over there.
Right, right. Yet.
Or that they do look different here. Is that what you're saying? To conditioning?
To conditioning it does. But experientially, when I'm practicing, I'm practicing. I'm directing the attention.
Right.
It wouldn't matter, like we talked about yesterday, if I'm in a grocery store or on the freeway or in the meditation hall.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm directing the attention to be present and here, the external content is irrelevant because we're looking at the process.
Right. You're paying attention. You're paying attention.
Right.
It's like paying attention, whether you're in the grocery store, whether you're in the monastery,
exactly.
The meditation hall, or you're in your hermitage or the other place.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the hermitage or the other place. And recently, I've been looking at the impermanence of this form. and just seeing a lot of assumption and beliefs around death that conditioning has carried for so long. And it's hard to articulate exactly what I'm seeing, but there'll be times when it usually happens like 2 or 3 in the morning, I'll wake up, and then condition will come up, the thought is we're going to die one day, and then there'll be nothing forever. Like nothing. Like there'll be no awareness, there'll be no form, and the ego goes into a panic state.
Mm-hmm. At 2 in the morning.
Yeah.
Like that. And then it just wakes you up.
Yeah, it wakes me up.
Just, you know, someday you're going to die, and that's it. There's nothing, there's no awareness, and nothing.
Right. Yeah.
And so that's how you've been looking at impermanence for yourself.
Right. And it's just seeing the death of ego's fear. Because it's also in practice of dropping ego. So it is kind of a daily exercise in the death of ego. When I'm practicing, is not turning my attention to conditioned mind, but rather to life, which in my experience so far doesn't seem to have any opinion on life or death. It just, what is.
Right, yeah. So when your attention is here on life,
right,
and just going around, there is no concern about life or death. It's just here. The ego seems to be very concerned about life and death, and maybe 2 in the morning to get you to be concerned about that you're not going to longer going to be here, and that it's just no awareness, no nothing, and that's it. Someday you're going to die, and that's it.
Yeah.
So you were looking at conditional fear.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because that's what you're doing, is you're practicing. It's losing its losing its life.
Right. Yes.
It comes from you.
Taking the life force away from it and giving it to life, or that which animates me is that life force that isn't it.
Right.
Yeah. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Well, along the same vein, I've been looking at how conditioning wants things to stay the same, and I'm looking at that in terms of habits of the body and habits of the mind. I've just been seeing like body habits in a way I haven't seen before. That there's certain habits that that have been adapted, I think, to be you know, conditioned habits, that patterns that the body, that this particular body goes through day in and day out, without questioning.
Right. Yeah. Just like you said, it's a habit. It's not something that there's any consciousness about. It's just that it's been done for so long in a particular way that there's these habits of the body and the mind that just go on, and you're just starting to bring attention to them.
There's certain motions that a body's capable of that have been eliminated from my repertoire.
Okay.
Somewhere along the line,
these certain things that you're okay. What the body can do have been eliminated from your repertoire.
The input from conditioning is that not you. And it just went on, without questioning. I've just been seeing how I would say I live a fairly active life, but yet within that active life, I just see how there's certain habits. I still stay within this conditioned pattern or this body.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That even though you have an active life, there are certain habits that you stay within in this life. These are the things that you do, and these are not you.
Exactly.
Not for you, or not.
Yeah.
You're not able to do it, or something like that.
I'll do it in this small range.
Right, from here to here.
Right. Uh-huh. And you know, as I say that, I can see it's so true with the mind as well. Mm-hmm. I'll do it in this you know, without being in this place of unlimited possibility, mm-hmm. you know, I'll do it within this.
Yeah, there's just
this,
yeah,
there's no this idea. Small enclosed mm-hmm. Frame of what conditioning says is possible for this person.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's just bringing greater awareness to me of body and mind being one, which has kind of been a koan for me. What the heck does that mean? You know?
Right, exactly.
Another one. Uh-huh. But I can see how those are just such mirrors of one another. Mm-hmm. And I've been playing with regular breaks to try just do a movement that's like out of the repertoire, you know.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't even have to be a big thing,
right?
But just even, you know, to like look up at the sky or
right, yeah. Because that's not something that's not what the habit is. That maybe that's not something that you would do,
right?
You know, it's not within your field. So yeah, it's interesting. You know,
yeah,
that just to break it, you know, to stop suddenly to do something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, and to just see in the same way that, you know, there's unlimited possibility for the being in all ways, mind, body, spirit, and to just open to that a little bit more and to not be so clamped down.
not just, because I would imagine if it's not you, there's certain things that are so you.
Yeah.
You know, so to be clamped down into such a, you know, a small little, within this particular framework, to look at possibility as something as looking for what is outside of that, and just trying that out and seeing what that does, because the mind and body are linked, or that's the calling that you're looking at, and just experimenting with breaking out of that, and even just looking up.
Yeah, I mean, I can see. I mean, I have habits of walking. Mm-hmm. That's a particular way I walk. You know, mm-hmm. I always work the reach for something with the right. I always, you know, it's just, it's really an interesting inquiry.
Yeah.
To
yeah.
see what just goes on habitually. And, you know, behind that is just looking at there's great joy and moving in all ways. You know, so exploring that. Unlocking that kind of joy.
To unlock the joy of, because life, when you're talking about that, it just reminds me that life is just moving in it, and then in moving it starts off what we're looking at, what you started out looking at too, about change.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
Things are always moving, and conditioning is so static, and
right.
It keeps us locked in this particular way, and not you, and just has no idea about who we are or anything, really.
Really. As you're saying that, what if I woke up in the morning with no idea about how to walk?
Right. I think that's a tweet that came out recently.
Well, this is going to be another experiment to see, you know, what happens, you know, how does this go together, you know?
Right, exactly. Maybe I'll just, figure the crawling part out.
Instead, well, I've done that before. Okay, let's just crawl. You know, head in one plane, feet in the other.
Uh-huh.
You know, just
going
on.
So we watch you walking around in really wasting ways.
You know, I don't know. It brings up the story that I heard about the monk that entered the hall backwards. Or was it, I don't know. It was an interesting, but just to, you know, to just totally break things up or, you know.
To play with that.
Play with it. Put your shoe on top of your head.
And just walk it back.
Anyway, so that's what I've been looking at.
All right, wow, thank you.
Thanks.
June. Part of me is saying this is shameful to talk about, so I haven't just talked about it. I'm not sure why it thinks it's shameful. Be a good way of keeping the shadow up. I think this is about coming home. I noticed in the middle of the night, I wake up in the night and it is just talking, you know. And hard upon the heels of the awareness of dropping it in, coming back to the breath, to the body, or in the words we're using today, coming home, something inserts itself. And what the experience of dropping in and coming back is, the words that have hurt me are cold and bloodless. It's a should. It's an ought to place. It's a place I should have been to begin with.
You should have never left.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's here's where you should be, instead of lost in thought. And this is your punishment. And it just seems to me that's really up there. And it's happened a lot, and I saw it the other night, a couple of nights ago. Mm-hmm. And I think the shame is that it's staying so long. But what immediately was clear was, well, no wonder there's no, you don't, there's no joy in this. Uh-huh. No wonder it just seems like a
cold,
bloodless place. And so I'm very excited about putting the shoe on my head and into the meditation hall. Uh-huh. Coming back to a place of warmth, mm-hmm. and kindness, mm-hmm. and love, and what it is trying to say is, yeah, I'll take that from you too. Uh-huh. I'll turn that into indulgence. And what I think I'll say back to it is, do your best.
Uh-huh. Whatever. I've got my eye on you. Yeah, because it's true. We're just going to try and come in and work its way in and cause shame and all that kind of stuff. Well, having an awareness that this is how it works.
Yeah. So, I just like to say these things out loud.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to share the awareness that you're having about how it says that you should have always known how to do this. You know, that that it calls coming back to the moment cold and bloodless, that it's a joyless experience because it's a should.
Yeah. There's it somehow it's penance. You don't deserve to come back to a place of warmth and kindness. Mm-hmm.
So that's what it says. You don't deserve to come back to a place of warmth and kindness.
Yeah. You should never have that again.
Right. And so therefore it's there you were in the place of warmth and kindness. You left it intentionally, and you should never have done that.
No, I was lost in thought.
Lost in thought.
I was identifying with mind chatter. And with practice, you know, we notice that.
Uh-huh.
And then, for me, the process has been to come back to a place, to the place that I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I should have been all along. And there's nothing fun about it. There's nothing helpful about it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I'm seeing it as it's kind of impressive how quickly conditioning inserts itself in the crack.
Right.
To make sure there's nothing there for this person, mm-hmm. that is in any way nourishing.
Right. Yeah. Well, there you are. You're in warmth and kindness. And there's a step in there about how to get lost in thought, you know. You can imagine how that happens, you know. It's all this, you know.
Okay.
So there it is, luring you out into a place of being in here, and then you have an awareness that that's where you are, and there's an assessment of it that that's where you are, and then you should never have left there. You should have stayed in the warmth and kindness.
Well,
and then
there's
need to be ashamed
of it. In the warmth and kindness.
I was never there.
Yeah. it's never available in any kind of anything but perhaps some fleeting intellectual way. And
that's really fun because it reminded me of an awareness that I had that was, that's so huge. It's one of those things that feels like, okay, yeah. but it's just having the experience and maybe having the experience again, I don't know. But so one of the koans that, I'm looking at all the time and I feel like people talk about it in Sangha a lot, so it's really fun is, you know, what's the place of life living and what's the place of conditioning directing? Mm-hmm. And so I've been actively sort of asking for assistance with that. That's one of my favorite practices, to just, you know, wake up in the morning and say, hey, I'd love to see something about such and such. Uh-huh. And then just completely let it go. Uh-huh. I don't even really actively look at it through the day. Mm-hmm. But it's amazing how I have two or three or four active ones like that right mm-hmm. now. And it's funny I say that. I don't even know how many because I don't even remember
right.
until suddenly something's happening and I'm like, oh my gosh, yeah. that is a direct teaching on that koan.
Right.
And yeah. Sometimes I don't even realize it until a couple minutes into recording about it. And uh-huh. I go, whoa, so yeah. thank you.
This is proof. This is the evidence. This yeah. is what I was waiting for. Yeah.
So I had one around that koan where I realized that So often there's a process of, should I do this or shouldn't I do that? Mm-hmm. You know, should I, shouldn't I? And that's so obviously coming from conditioning, mm-hmm. but it can feel like it's not or something. I don't know. It can really feel like that there's, yeah, I really need to, I mean, even to the point of, no, is that coming from conditioning or is that coming, you know, mm-hmm. like that, right?
Right, right.
So it happens all the time, and I'm trying to think of a concrete example to make it clear, like, not that this happens here, but so let's say, you know, do I want to have another cookie, uh-huh. right?
Right.
So, what will happen is, there's that question, mm-hmm. do I want to have a cookie? And then it feels like the immediate information is, you shouldn't. And then that it can go down that slippery track of, well, who's saying that, and where is that coming from, and is that deprivation, or is it indulgence, or, you know, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But what I saw that happen in a particular instance the other day. Well, you shouldn't do that. Well, and then someone else comes up to say, but I really want to, mm-hmm. you know. And but what I saw that was so... It produced that excitement that I project was just being talked about a minute ago.
Right.
Right before that, the split hair second before that, that feels like it did not come in language, but I realized was there, mm-hmm. was just information, and I don't even quite know how to put it, but something like, let's not. Mm-hmm. Like, information from life or the mentor of sort of that place of, I know you want ice cream right before dinner, who could blame you? Mm-hmm. But we're not going to do that. Mm-hmm. Not because I don't love you, not because we can never have ice cream, but that we're just not going to do that right now. Mm-hmm. And that comes from a loving place. It comes not from a deprivation place. Mm-hmm. And it comes from a place of, it's not that ice cream is wrong and bad and we can never have it. It's just that there's a larger picture that doesn't fit into right now.
Right.
And so the way that feels like that place takes care of everything, everyone, however you want to say that, mm-hmm. the way that conditioning takes that away is to immediately come in with, you shouldn't. Mm-hmm.
So instead of it seeing it from the larger perspective, it turns it into a should or a shouldn't, you shouldn't.
Yeah. So in that, I think when I'm there, when I'm actually present, what I get is, I don't quite know, but everyone's needs are met. Mm-hmm. Even though the particular content that someone may have wanted, and that's even questionable in there. Is it even mm-hmm. someone who wanted it, or was it just mm-hmm. ego introducing it to create an issue? Mm-hmm. But even if it was a someone who wanted it, it feels like that someone's need gets taken care of in that compassionate perspective,
right?
Acknowledging the need
exactly.
or the want,
yeah.
mm-hmm. you know?
Yep.
Not making any judgment. There's complete acceptance.
There is none. It just doesn't fit in the picture of what's going on right now.
And sort of noting it for, well, let's look for an opening when that is mm-hmm. the thing to do. Because mm-hmm. there will be. There'll be some time where ice cream is the thing to do.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Right. It's almost like an appropriateness to it. It's like it's got a, it's actually present to what is actually going on. It's mm-hmm. not a, okay, well, I know you want ice cream before dinner. Who could blame you? I do too, but we're not going to because that's not fitting into the bigger perspective. It has nothing to do with shoulds or shouldn'ts.
Mm-hmm.
This
or
person's good or bad
mm-hmm.
or anything at all. It's not about deprivation. It's not about indulgence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe some moment further along down the line we'll have ice cream
mm-hmm.
later.
Mm-hmm. Here's the best thing about it, as you were reflecting on it, that I saw, is that it gives the ability to appreciate whatever's happening in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the whole point of that ice cream conversation is that, first of all, the suffering of Kriya
Right.
Yeah.
And
then if I choose the ice cream, what's going to happen while I am eating the ice cream? Total suffering.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even going to get to eat the ice cream.
Yeah,
that's all it is, plain and simple.
Mm-hmm.
But when there's the time for ice cream, and that it just is, oh, there's such enjoyment of it.
Yeah, well, it's a conscious decision, that's what I saw as you were saying that. It was like, you know, like, it wasn't just out of the blue, I want ice cream before. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because that's what sounds different about it in the way you're
yeah,
describing
although
it.
In a funny sort of way, and I'll have to look at this more, it really is my experience that, I mean, when you said out of the blue, there's a sense of, I mean, when I feel like I'm just right here,
mm-hmm.
often something will just arise. Like, in a way, the premeditated is the biggest clue that is coming from conditioning. Like the planning hours ahead. Oh, I can't wait for this. I can't wait for this.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But the just being there to see what's arising
uh-huh.
as life offers it. And then just getting to enjoy everything life offers,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it does. It offers everything. And it feels like conditioning gets fixed on, I only want free time and sleep and comfort and, you know, but like, I mean, but life offers everything. It offers busy. It offers, I mean, busy in the sense of like, you know, lots to put my to do, if you will. Like,
yeah.
You know, it offers quiet, it offers, you know, sleep, it offers days when there isn't that much sleep, it offers rain, it offers sun, it offers uh-huh. excitement, it offers, I mean, everything.
Yeah. That's so in time, it ties in with what we started out looking at with change and stuff like that. That in the moment, anything is possible.
Mm-hmm.
Conditioning has a fixed idea about how things mm-hmm. should be in it. That's what was really powerful about what you were saying about, you know, the planning for, I'm going to get that ice cream, you know, I'm going
exactly.
to work it out. So it's
I'm missing everything that's
going on. Else that's
that.
Going on by
this isn't my life. Before I have to do the dishes, and I have to meditate, and I have to, all of that's not
stuff,
my life.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for the ice cream.
Exactly. Right.
You know?
The ice cream's going to fill that spot. In
and
my
then
life.
It's like, I mean, what are the chances? My God, your entire life is riding on the ice cream.
Right. And then when the people have the experience of having the ice cream, it's like, well.
Even that stunk.
I wasn't here for that either.
That was over in 5 minutes and I chose the wrong flavor.
Or, you know, it's the next thing that, you know, it's like, mm-hmm.
the bike.
I gotta
get
the bike.
Yeah. And just what a huge percentage of life is lost in that. Because that's not my life, that's not my life, that's not my life, that this is going to be my life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Going to be, yes, that's the key.
Going to be, and it never is. It doesn't ever arrive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you. Just.
I've seen some stuff about that too. What I've been seeing is that ego, you know, as I said, ego wants, you know, what's comfortable. He wants to avoid anything difficult, anything hard, anything painful. And you know, those things are inherently unavoidable. And so that it wants to compensate for things that are hard by having, you know, pleasures. And that's the whole basic orientation to life, it feels like. I was looking the other day about this kind of dual track, and that's the track number two, is don't you know, avoid anything hard, painful, difficult. Have these small pleasures as a way to kind of compensate for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it seems like that's the teaching of the Buddha, basically, in general, like, I'm going to avoid everything that I don't like, or people I don't enjoy their pleasure, and I'm going to seek out things that I actually do like and enjoy, and like that, so.
Kind of that suffering.
Yeah, the equal suffering, yeah, either one of those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what I've been seeing about it over the past couple of days is that in order to, so like, let's say the ice cream or whatever it is, you know, the pleasure, in order to really, it feels like what's called for is to relinquish that. Mm-hmm. Not the thing itself, because there's nothing inherently wrong with ice cream or anything else like that. But it's the motivation behind it, mm-hmm. that leads to our suffering, as was just being talked about. And it seems like in order to really relinquish it, there has to be another pleasure that's deeper than that, mm-hmm. that is available kind of as it's not really a substitute or a compensation, but instead of something that really does satisfy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it feels like there is a lot of that available. Like, mm-hmm. Like as was being talked about, you know, I really want the ice cream, but that's not what's happening right now. Mm-hmm. And to choose what is happening right now instead of what ego wants, there's a certain kind of pleasure that comes from that. Mm-hmm. It's a different sort of pleasure, but it's much deeper, it feels like. You know, anything, kind of doing, it's not really the right thing versus right, as in right versus wrong, but doing the right thing, mm-hmm. Doing what I know is correct and is in line with my life and all of where life is going, it really, really feels good.
Yeah, that's a deeper form of being in line with a pleasure that's deeper than just something that you want.
Mm-hmm. And it feels like that can be sort of a draw. You know, so like let's say maybe there is a young part of me who feels I fight this hard. And that's the only thing he's ever been given as a way to kind of deal with that, is these little pleasures that he gets to put his attention on for a moment. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, he gets beaten up immediately afterwards. So giving him another pleasure, but one that actually is in keeping with life, I feel like that works. If it is a legitimate part of me, and if that works, right. it's like, well, that's, you know, I can see from, because I'm outside of the dynamic, that's not going to work. You know, going for that pleasure as a way of dealing with what's going on is just going to lead to more hard and painful, difficult things that we have to compensate for. Mm-hmm. But here's this other thing. So we can have the pleasure of being in alignment with life. And it really is a concrete pleasure. It feels good. It even feels good in the body. Mm-hmm. And I think a part of me who really just wants to be okay, it will say, okay, sure, I'll give up that for that. That's a no-brainer.
No-brainer, exactly. This one actually, it sounds like that one nourishes you rather than creates more suffering along the way. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's not just a setup for something that's going to have to compensate for later on down the line.
Yeah. And it feels like the real pleasure is, at least for me, is being kind of in at one with life. Mm-hmm. Or there's just been, you know, I was raised as a Christian, so there's all, you know, kind of Christian things dropping up at this point for me. But, you know, like especially like old kind of Catholic teaching says stuff like, God will lead. God leads in two ways. One is by consolations, which is, you know, bliss and, you know, feeling good. Mm-hmm. And also through suffering. And God leads in both ways. You know, and so like God calls us to it in both of those ways, and if you know, like heading down the I need ice cream in order to compensate for the way I feel, that's the suffering route, because mm-hmm. that produces suffering. It's like, it's in a way, it's like the ice cream, I'm choosing ice cream over God, mm-hmm. ice cream is, it's like it eclipses it. It's more important than God.
Right.
And that is inevitably going to produce unhappiness.
Well, it's almost like the ice cream is symbolizing an emptiness that is not God. You know, like, it's like, I'm going to go get this thing because it's the only thing I've got.
Yeah, and it's for ego. You know, it's for the sense of separation. Mm-hmm. But again, I was just really getting that this morning, that to give up those things for the experience of being at one with God or with life is blissful. Mm-hmm. And then it makes me want to look for more things to give up.
Right, because you're focusing on something that is not a deprivation, it's a having something. That's the pleasure of being in union with God.
That's a good point. That's a nice way of saying it, yeah. Instead of it being an, like, because without that, it's just like, I'm just giving up. I just need to stop doing something that's pleasurable.
Yeah.
And that sounds unavoidable.
Right, exactly. Right.
That just sounds like a bad
It's not sustainable. it's just the image that that's painted on religious practice in general. It's like just, you know, this cold, dreary place where you just sit on your knees constantly praying to somebody.
Forever. Yeah, you don't actually get it. It's all just giving things up.
Yeah, it's all just a big giving up. Yeah.
So that's nice what you said, that I think you said it's a having something. Mm-hmm. So I see that I get to have something by this,
right,
by this relinquishment. Mm-hmm. You really provide a lot of motivation for that. Mm-hmm. It's, I love that because it's not theoretical. It's experiential.
Yes.
It can be something like a habit of thought, or like a habit of feeling separate, which is something that I've got a lot. I'm going to give that up for God. Mm-hmm. You know, if I give that up, I can actually let that go, because that's what, it's almost like life is putting that in front of me in order to let it go.
Right.
So that I can experience what it's like to not be separate.
Yeah, as you said that, as you move gesture, it was like that is between you and God. So you can get that the way you get closer to God.
It really is. It's between me and God. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in ego, I think that's why ego clings to it so much. Mm-hmm. You know, it desperately wants to have that thing there that's in between me and God. Mm-hmm. And as was pointed out earlier, I can get in my head about, is that the right thing or the wrong thing? Mm-hmm. Or maybe I choose one or the other and I get beat up for it and feel bad. And
that too is like between you and God.
All of that, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's trying to throw all that stuff.
Yeah.
And there's this, I'm just really sensing, especially this morning, that there's this simplicity and purity and clarity. Mm-hmm. Just utterly simple. And I'm just not going to do that.
It's like Jude said, nope.
Yeah, just what I want. It's that single point of focus we were talking about the other night. Mm-hmm. All I really want is to be at one with light, or to be at one with God, depending on how you talk about it. Mm-hmm. That's all I want. And so it just makes everything just super simple.
Yeah.
Super clear.
Yeah, very clear, yeah. It's almost pleasurable to do that, to actually get all those things out between you and life and that experience.
Yeah, it's because it's pleasurable. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This conversation and the practice period I find myself in life showing the expression, when duality arises, the Buddha mind is lost. Mm-hmm. So I always thought that meant, you know, like duality is like yes, no, right, wrong, ice cream, no ice cream. Mm-hmm. But what I'm seeing is that the real duality, where the Buddha mind is lost, is when a separate ego separates from authentic being. That's the duality, and that's from which the content is projected as the duality.
Right.
And it just seems so clear in this particular moment that as soon as that, any of that dissatisfaction starts, that's what's happened, is that the separation from life has happened.
Yeah, it's just been separated from life, and there it can have its content, whatever it is.
Yeah. And the one who separates out is the one that, you know, has the opinions and decides how I'm doing and if it's right, if it's wrong, and if I should have the ice cream or not have the ice cream, mm-hmm. when the whole thing is simply because there's that separation and standing outside of life and viewing life and instead of being in life.
Huh, that's interesting. So instead of being in life, it's separate from life, viewing life,
uh-huh.
and making decisions based on what it's seeing.
Yeah, yeah. It feels very literally like it just steps out of life
mm-hmm.
and stands back and opinionates on it.
Right, Cameron. So what are you going to do?
And well,
how about you do this? Yeah.
You should do this. You should not do that.
Uh-huh. You're doing really well. No, you're not.
Yeah. And none of that feels good at all. Even when getting praise from this judgmental fiction.
Even when
life is not rosy and cheery in what you would choose, being there for it seems, in my experience, much more pleasant and preferable than standing outside of it and opining about it.
Yeah, that's much more pleasurable to be there in the experience of life.
Yeah.
Rather than outside of it.
Yeah.
Pining.
Yeah, and so, you know, it seems like it makes it easier. Just, you know, this doesn't feel good. I'm not happy, I'm suffering, whatever. Just then it doesn't matter whether I should have ice cream or not have ice cream, it's irrelevant. I should get back to the moment.
Huh. Yeah.
And whether to have ice cream or not will be evident.
Right, yeah.
There's no opinion needed.
Right. Well, so what I hear you saying is the priority is to get here.
Yeah.
You know, when you said that, it was like, okay, it's really, I'm not happy, I'm suffering, there's clearly something going on here. And to step out of the content that it would normally drag you into and to create more suffering or continue more, you're going to prioritize getting here.
Yeah, and I've heard that forever, and, you know, it all, you know, intellectually, mm-hmm. but now I actually see mm-hmm. how that is so, mm-hmm. that trying to work out over here, you know, whether I should or should not, or it's just really not going to go anywhere
mm-hmm.
except spinning there, which is suffering, period, whichever way. And so now it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
That what we're supposed to do, well, not what we're supposed to do, but what is, you know, what will bring us back into life is to drop all that and just
mm-hmm.
breathe or whatever,
mm-hmm.
focus on something
mm-hmm.
positive or the sun or the hair or the
whatever gets you here.
Gets to get back here mm-hmm. and then just let life decide whether yes or no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it'll become evident
there,
not in this suffering separate place.
Yeah. So.
Good, thank you.
Jane. So when I sit in group and listen, it's like there's a kid running around my head that goes, "That's brilliant!" And it's kind of like, "That's fantastic!" And by the time I get to talk, I'm completely befuddled. Oh, that was brilliant! I really like that. So anyway, I'll try and be slightly coherent and less like a little kid that's running around my head. I think kind of what I'm getting is something that's really resonating for me is essentially this idea of there being a time for everything
mm-hmm.
and trusting that there is a time for everything.
Mm-hmm.
Conditioning wants to keep this idea of like there's this kind of state of life. And there's this much pleasure and this much rest and this much work and it stays fixed.
Uh-huh.
And then, but clearly, and I've seen this personally recently, there are phases of transition
mm-hmm.
where, you know, there's busier times and then there's times where you need to rest maybe not in this way. It's like the word balance is actually a little bit insidious. Uh-huh. Because actually it isn't, life isn't balanced. It's up and down and flowing and in and out and backwards and forwards.
All over the place, yes.
And it seems to me that there's kind of an art to cultivate in just trusting going with that, mm-hmm. and not grasping what's in front of me.
Yeah.
Needing to have this experience now, needing to have the ice cream now, because my experience, if I have the ice cream now, it's a little bit off, is that it feels like compensation.
Yeah.
I'm practicing compensation. I'm not really there for the pleasure. Right. If I'm watching a movie or something that I kind of got into for some reason, it's kind of a compensation because I was tired at the end of the day or something.
Right. Yeah.
And so to actually know and trust that there is a time for everything. And I think it comes down to like this kind of fear of impermanence. What if this is the moment?
Right.
You know, I think right. that's, I think underneath everything there's the kind of, you know, I fantasize about the ice cream now in case I don't get the ice cream.
Right, yeah, because you never know. I might not be here the next moment, so I've got to have all these experiences before, because this could be it.
And when I'm walking around the monastery, and there is such beauty, there's also something in here that's going, you've got to appreciate this. Mm-hmm. You need to have this. You need to fully have this
ultimate
experience.
Or something like that. Yeah.
Sorry?
It's like the ultimate consumer, you know? It's like it's constantly, like when you were describing the grasping, it's just constantly grasping for things, even ideas about how things should be, you know?
Yeah.
Like balance. Yeah. You know, that it's got this compartmentalized view of like, this is the time to rest, this is the time to work, this is the time to, and it's, life's not like that. It's constantly like, it's, it could be that now is a longer period of time where I actually need to rest, or, but it's not in any kind of, it's not any kind of fixed idea about how it should be.
Yeah, and the fact that, I don't know, there is just don't know. The fact that there is don't know,
right.
and the fact that life will love me and look after me,
that's the trust.
Is the place where there's a possibility of not needing or letting go of some of that other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I walk out the meditation hall now, the beauty of the monastery is still going to be here. I didn't have to have it all at 9 o'clock this morning. It's okay.
Yeah, that reassurance me that it's okay.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. And I do think it does feel as if it's, it is quite a primal thing about this, like, this impermanence feeling,
mm-hmm.
this need to know, this need to do, this need to have it now.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fear of ego that's very, visceral,
mm-hmm.
kind of,
yeah.
and it's just starting to see that and kind of going, oh, that's really interesting. That's another way it gets me on the kind of deepest sensation level.
Yeah, the visceral level of like, I need to know, I need to have, I need to get, or you're playing with don't know because you don't.
Exactly. There's very specifically, it's not I don't know because there's no I in that experience of don't know. If I feel that and I have that, then it's very clear that there's not an ego there. That's, mm-hmm. that's the experience of don't know in that kind of in the sense which it's most helpful is the experience of being at one with and trusting I.
Mm-hmm.
Just very good to see.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yes.
I've been looking a lot at self-discipline in my life lately, and so this conversation just rings really true for me right now. And I think for a long time, before I came to practice, or the early parts of practice, everything seemed like a should, and so I rejected it all. I was like, oh, that's conditioning telling me I should, you know, be doing this, or I should be doing that. And so I just threw it all away, you know, and I'm not going to do that if somebody tells me I need to do that. And so what I found now is that I needed to come back to understanding, you know, what is good and right for this person, and, you know, what would be the path that, you know, that God would want me to choose in this situation, you know, is it the ice cream, or is it taking my dog for a walk, or, and so I've had to kind of quiet the, you know, rejecting the shoulds and all of that, and just be open and present and aware right now of, you know, what are my choices. And that I've noticed when I don't do the old behavior of rejecting the shoulds or indulging, you know, that there's these little mini deaths that happen, and that it helps me to be a little bit closer to right here, and not expecting that it's a should or conditioning, or that it not, and not knowing, and just being okay with not knowing, and being open to what feels right in this moment.
Rather than it just being a rejecting of these shoulds or indulgence, it's actually just being here and seeing what is so, mm-hmm. what is needed in this moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
And see what will take care of you, mm-hmm. and looking at self-discipline from that perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this moment will take care of me, mm-hmm. and it will be clear. And then if it's not clear, that's okay too. That, you know, it's all a process of me connecting with, you know, what I believe is God. And I've recently, you know, been practicing kind of, well, not recently, I would say in the last like 5 years, just really practicing being at a place where I feel connected spiritually and emotionally, and the piece that was missing for me was the physical, and feeling connected with the universe and God and all of that in my physical body. And and I found, you know, I rejected the should. Well, you should join a gym, or you should swim, or you should run, or you should be doing yoga every day, or, you know, and I rejected all of that and didn't do anything, you know. And so now I'm at a place where I'm running for you, God, you know, and that's what I'm doing, is it's just starting somewhere. Like, I'm in this moment on my treadmill just running, and this is it. And there's no should, it just feels right, and that's my starting place right now, and just being able to find joy in that. You know, I'm doing this because I really feel like this is how I'm starting to connect with God in my physical body, and so
it's like almost like a shift in the way you're perceiving it. You know, so it's getting framed as a should, mm-hmm. you know, you should join a gym, you should do these things, these exercises, and then, but it's now you're run for God,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're going to do this because it takes care of you, or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, I want to find the joy in that too.
Right, yeah. So it's just, it's nice to be, I like what was shared about, it's not necessarily balance, it's just being aware of what in this point in time is the choice that I feel connected to. Mm-hmm. And like the discipline, the self-discipline part is not giving in to these kind of extremes of shoulds and rejecting the should, or, you know, this is the path that God says is right and good and you should always do. You know, it's
yeah,
like,
another way to fit it into that kind of, you know, should or extreme.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's been really freeing, and I find so much joy in this place, and it's just an exciting path to be on, and yeah, it seems like everyone's share today is just like, it just fits so well with with, you know, what I'm seeing right now in my life. So. Yeah,
it's amazing how Sangha works, isn't it? It's almost like I always get that feeling whenever I come into group that, you know, people will follow me around. Know what it is that I was looking at.
Yeah.
Just so they can illuminate the path for me.
So true. Yeah, and just feeling that giddiness with each share that, you know, it's, wow, it's a beautiful thing to witness, and I'm just grateful to be here. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have been working on just accepting the difficult things and not pushing against them, wishing they would go away, or punishing myself for making that happen. Especially in, when I'm driving someplace and I'm late and I hit a red light or I'm behind somebody slow. Instead of, having that, what was shared earlier, that commentator that splits off and starts telling you, you should have gotten out of the way, or you should have left earlier, or you should have done this or that. I'm just...
Where were you when I needed you?
Yeah, exactly. Where were you when the decisions were made?
Right.
I've just been accepting it, taking a deep breath and letting it go and just not getting so aggro about it, you know, and it's okay if I'm 10 minutes. Like, nobody's gonna be angry, you know, it's not the end of the world. Just let it go. Accept that this is where you are right now. You can't change it. And it's been so much easier to be in my life and go forward without having that as an option anymore. You know, it's not the traffic that's making me suffer. It's not the red light. It's how I'm reacting to it that's making me suffer.
Yeah, well, it's all the commentary about how what's going on. It's the self-hate that's layered on top of it. As though if it would help, then that's one thing, but it really doesn't. Just creating suffering in that.
Yeah, and if you just let that, just drop that, and be here and accept it, the suffering goes away. It's been amazing for me to realize that actually just goes away.
Yeah.
And that it really isn't the red light that's causing the suffering. Because I can sit here at the red light and be really calm and not freak out about it. If I just look at it in this other way, you know, if I just shut the commentary off and don't let it even begin. So.
Yeah, you know, it gets us into this state, and then so the more things can get piled in, so that I'm in this state when I'm, you know, with the red light, and I'm not actually paying attention to the driving, and so God knows anything could else happen, you know, as you're doing that.
Yeah, you're not paying attention to the road at all. It's just that, and you're bringing about, you know, you're not paying attention, you're not being present with what you're doing, and it's really very dangerous to do that. Definitely working on being present in those difficult moments.
Yeah, well, it's interesting, you know, as a practice to be paying attention in all moments.
Yeah.
Seeing the setup for all of it too. You know, it's like, how did I? You know, so it's like when we've been practicing with the spirit of inquiry, it's like, so how did I end up, you know, late or whatever like that, or, you know, not from the point of self-hate, because, you know, the criticism will come in and just start pointing out, well, I've always been like that, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But it's like, just how did that happen, you know? And then actually having it, the conversation be with, say, like the mentor or something like that. Someone would encourage you to help you along.
Yeah.
And give you good guidance.
Yeah, and rather than it being a judgmental conversation with yourself about how you got there, but just an awareness of the chain of events and a helpful and caring way, you know, just that you can't do it that way, that it can't happen in a way that's going to help you in the future rather than punish you.
Yeah, we're just paying attention as you're going all about your time and just noticing, oh, that's how it happens.
Yeah, you know, I just try to do one more thing. So it's just one little step in the right direction. So. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. Got 30. No, I think that's it. That's our time. Thank you.